From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Islamic State militants are said to have shot down a coalition warplane. A suicide bomber kills a number of people near Baghdad. The U.S. president welcomes a decision by Sony Pictures to release a movie about the leader of North Korea. Talks are scheduled in the Ukraine crisis. It's all ahead. I'm Dave DeForest. Jordan says Islamic State militants have captured one of its pilots after his plane went down in northern Syria during a mission against IS insurgents. The Jordanian army said in a statement today that it is holding the militants responsible for the pilot's life and safety. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights reported earlier that Islamic State fighters shot the plane down near Raqqa. The city is the main stronghold for the militants who seized large areas in eastern Syria and northern and western Iraq earlier this year. Jordan, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates are all taking part in U.S.-led airstrikes targeting the Islamic State group in Syria. The World Health Organization says it is preparing to deliver medical and aid supplies to several rebel-held suburbs of the Syrian capital Damascus and suburbs of the country's largest city, Aleppo, following an agreement with the government. Edward Uranian reports.
High-level contacts between the United Nations and the Syrian government have produced an agreement for medical and other relief supplies to enter a number of rebel-held regions surrounding Damascus and Aleppo. It was not immediately clear when those deliveries would begin. A UN relief convoy was recently allowed to deliver supplies to the rebel-held town of Talbisi near Syria's third-largest city, Homs. Such agreements have been difficult to carry out during previous attempts, and some critically needed supplies were not included. WHO Syria Relief Effort Coordinator Elizabeth Hoff tells VOA the onset of winter has made the need for medicine extremely urgent.
It is winter and very cold, and we have more upper respiratory infections in children and also in adults. So these are concerns in addition to the normal difficulties that we are facing on the ground. But the health situation in general is deteriorating.
Arab satellite channels have shown amateur videos of residents of some Syrian towns cutting down ancient olive trees to heat their houses. Natural gas and heating oil are in extremely short supply in many places, and prices are beyond the reach of ordinary people. Hoff noted medicine and supplies to treat battle wounds is critical.
The needs are increasing, particularly for trauma care and for medicines and supplies to cater for chronic diseases like insulin and asthma, epilepsy, and also for normal care, which is happening in any population. And we have almost 57% of the health facilities that are damaged, partially damaged, or out of service completely. So we are trying to fill gaps, either at central level or at the local level.
Hoff says health supplies are not affected by EU or U.S. sanctions against Syria, but are in short supply.
Medicines and medical supplies are not under sanctions, but they are affected by the side effect of the sanctions because the government cannot transfer capital out of the country to procure the supplies. And it is quite clear that anything that can be done to help for these supplies to come in, also for the government, will be of great aid.
Seven outlying regions of Aleppo will be included in the WHO aid deliveries, along with the besieged rebel-held Damascus suburbs of Douma and Madamia. UN Special Envoy for Syria, Stephane de Mistura, has been trying to negotiate a partial ceasefire in Aleppo with the Syrian government and rebel leaders. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Iraqi officials say a suicide bomber targeting pro-government Sunni militiamen has killed a number of people in an attack near the country's capital. The blast happened today in the town of Madain, about 45 kilometers south of Baghdad. U.S. President Barack Obama is welcoming Sony Pictures' decision to release a controversial movie about the assassination of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Sony pulled the interview last week after its computers were hacked by unknown attackers who threatened more damage if the film was released as scheduled. The U.S. blamed North Korea for the cyber attack. As Sony Pictures reversed course and prepares to release the controversial movie, North Korea's internet service remained spotty after going dark for nearly 10 hours on Monday. The movie, a comedy about an assassination plot against North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, drew a sharp criticism from the North Korean government, although it has denied any involvement in the Sony hacking. Although the U.S. government has refused to discuss its involvement, if any, in North Korea's internet outage, Matthew Prince, the CEO of California-based internet security firm Cloudflare, told VOA's Victor Beatty there are three possibilities.
The first, which can seem somewhat absurd to people living somewhere like the United States, is that the North Koreans themselves may be taking themselves off the internet. That seems absurd, but we've seen other authoritarian regimes such as Syria, Egypt, Libya just in the last year do exactly that. And so often in times of turmoil in countries, they'll try and isolate themselves more from outside influence. And so the first possibility could be that North Korea has intentionally taken themselves off the internet in order to isolate themselves from any outside influence. The second possibility is that this could be just an extremely ill-timed hardware failure. North Korea is connected to the rest of the internet over a single connection. If they're not the least connected internet country in the world, they're certainly in the top five. Third possibility, which is the one that a lot of people are speculating about, is that there may have been some outside influence, some sort of an attack, which actually saturated the North Korean pipes and made it so that they weren't available online. And all of North Korea's capacity for their internet connection amounts to essentially 500 home broadband connections. So it wouldn't take a lot to overwhelm those connections with a bunch of illegitimate traffic, effectively crowding out any of the legitimate North Korean traffic.
I wanted to ask you about some of these groups like Guardians of Peace, which purportedly claimed responsibility for going after Sony Pictures' computer networks, and groups like Anonymous. Do these groups make it more difficult, and is there a growing threat to cybersecurity as a result of the existence of these groups?
One of the real challenges online today is that a single individual with a laptop can cause an enormous amount of harm. So there was just 2 weeks ago a British teenager that was convicted of launching what's known as a denial of service attack, which is basically flooding a connection with so many requests that it crowds out all the legitimate requests. The attack that this teenager launched 2 years ago was over 300 gigabits per second of traffic. That's two orders of magnitude more traffic than the entire capacity of the North Korean internet. And this teenager was able to do it from a single laptop working on his own. If an individual or a small group of individuals can anonymously launch these attacks, then that poses a real challenge. And part of what Cloudflare is built to do, and services like Cloudflare, is to make sure that anyone who is a bully can't shut down some speech or some other part of the network that they potentially disagree with. And so, you know, whether it's the Guardians of Peace, you know, whoever that is, if that's North Korean hackers or someone just trying to masquerade as North Korea, or Anonymous, which is a very loose-knit group of individuals that from time to time to come together on a collective cause, the real risk here is that you have this asymmetry where a small group of individuals can negatively impact even some of the largest companies and even, you know, in some cases, nation states by using cyber attacks to target them.
Prince says the internet is a network operated from the bottom up, not the top down, and is governed by all of its participants. Any global effort to enforce certain standards would raise the risk of some countries gaining enough influence to censor parts of the web they don't agree with. Sean Gallagher, IT editor of the technology and science website Ars Technica, says Sony Pictures was woefully unprepared to deflect November's cyber attack.
Sony didn't take this sort of an attack as a serious possibility in its planning for security. And the way that these people managed to work their way into Sony's network and get into sensitive data is something that's happened on a number of occasions this year and over the last year, for the past several years. It's become a more and more regular sort of event. The hacking of Target and of Home Depot, for example, which was strictly cyber criminal activity, where they went in and stole credit card numbers from point-of-sale systems, it used a similar sort of technique. They used a stolen password, stolen credentials for someone who had access to the network to gain access and go in and plant malware. And in that case, it was malware that allowed them to skim credit card information off of registers. In this case, they used a stolen administrative password to get into the system and get access to servers in Sony's network, and then were able to distribute malware across all the computers in the network. It wasn't something that required a great deal of magical programming skill. It is something that required a great deal of time and effort, and someone took a very long time to go through their network and collect information about how it worked and used that along with the administrative access they had gained to deal a very crippling blow to the network.
Is this a growing issue?
It is, and the problem is that this sort of an attack is within the grasp of more and more types of organizations. Criminal organizations are willing to hire themselves out to just about anyone for a dime. People have developed the technology to do these things. What used to be considered a state-sponsored sort of capability, this advanced persistent threat, is something that's now within the grasp of just about anyone who has the time and the determination to learn how to do it. And in the case of North Korea, it's believed that they've basically leveraged a lot of information available in underground marketplaces on the internet to learn how to do this sort of malware. And they've been perfecting their attack over time. They've used tools that the Iranians have also used. I think we'll be seeing more of these attacks, especially since it gained such attention for these attackers and it had a material effect on the target. And it's caused a response from the United States government.
Gallagher says companies like Sony need to use the kind of security measures employed by financial companies to protect their data. He says it is clear Sony stored sensitive employee information and business partners in a way that could be accessed by outsiders. Thank you for joining us for International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington, sitting in for Susan Yockey.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America.
Ukraine's government is set to meet with pro-Russian rebels today for talks aimed at ending the war in the east. The talks in Belarus will include representatives from Ukraine, the Eastern rebels, Russia, and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. The representative of the OSCE, which is organizing the talks, said the agenda will include how to solidify a September ceasefire that has reduced the fighting. The pullback of troops and heavy weapons, prisoner exchanges, and the delivery of humanitarian aid to eastern Ukraine are also on the agenda. The Russian trade bloc that helped trigger the crisis in Ukraine, known as the Eurasian Economic Union, has met in Moscow. VOA's Daniel Scharf reports.
The Eurasian Economic Union is headed for a rough start as the trade bloc met Tuesday in Moscow under the pain of Russia's collapsing economy and the absence of Ukraine. Western sanctions over Ukraine and a drop in the price of oil are pushing Russia's economy into a recession that is also hurting its neighbors in the trade group. But speaking after a meeting of the Supreme Eurasian Economic Council, Russia's President Vladimir Putin voiced optimism the trade bloc was making headway for its members.
Напомню, что создается общий рынок, действующий на основе универсальных правил и норм.
Mr. Putin says a joint market is being created to act on the basis of the general rules of the World Trade Organization with more than 170 million consumers and a joint GDP of more than $4.5 trillion. Many customs and administrative barriers, he says, have been eliminated, and business opportunities for realization of joint investment projects have expanded significantly. The leaders of Belarus, Russia, and Kazakhstan will launch the union in January, while Armenia is in the process of joining and Kyrgyzstan plans to join next year. Former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych was ousted from power earlier this year in a popular uprising after he backed out of a European deal in favor of the Russian economic plan. Russia responded to Ukraine's revolution with a flood of propaganda, annexation of Crimea, and support for armed rebellions in eastern Ukraine in fighting that has claimed 5,000 lives. Kyiv's western-leaning leaders signed an association agreement with the European Union. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Moscow.
In India, Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party has made impressive gains in local elections held in the disputed Muslim-majority Kashmir region, although it failed to win a majority. Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi. The party has also wrested power in another state, expanding its footprint in the country.
The Bharatiya Janata Party has 125 of 87 seats in the Jammu and Kashmir Assembly, just a handful of seats behind the regional People's Democratic Party, which won the most seats. No party in the state secured a clear majority. Although the BJP's bid to take control of the government in the Muslim-majority region failed, its strong showing means the Hindu Nationalist Party will be a dominant force in Kashmir's politics. Kashmir is claimed by both India and Pakistan. The BJP had hoped that a victory will help them integrate the region, where anti-India sentiment runs high, more closely with the rest of the country. BJP head Amit Shah said the election results show voters endorse Prime Minister Modi's style of governance. He pointed out the party has more than doubled its share of seats in the state. Shah says all options are open to the party, whether to form the government, support another party, or join a coalition. Political analyst Satish Misra at New Delhi's Observer Research Foundation says the possibility of BJP being part of the Kashmir government, along with the People's Democratic Party, cannot be ruled out.
Ideally, it would be much better if the two parties dropped their ideological reservations and formed a government together. Because BJP being in power and center, then the development of Jammu and Kashmir will be smooth and the governance will be frictionless.
Kashmiris, weary of years of strife, voted in large numbers, hoping to get a government that will focus on development. But BJP picked up most of its support from the Hindu-dominant Jammu region. It fared poorly in the Kashmir Valley, the hub of a two-decade separatist campaign, and where the party is eyed with deep suspicion due to its Hindu nationalist leanings. The party also failed to make a dent in Buddhist Ladakh. There was some good news for the party in the east of the country. It also won power in Jharkhand state, the third state it has won since May, when it won control of the federal government.
We have gained a lot in 2014 after having won the national election. But the people, they have to perform well according to people's expectations, the promises that they have made. And the kind of issues that are being raked up at the moment, I think people would start, stop and start thinking about the BJP. Because the next 2015 is going to be very crucial for the BJP.
But Satish Misra sounds a note of caution. The BJP is currently under fire from opposition parties for not reining in hardline affiliate groups that are allegedly luring Christians and Muslims to convert to Hinduism. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Well, thank you for joining us for International Edition today. You can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website. It's voanews.com. Check it out. Sitting in again today for Susan Yaki, I'm Dave DeForest in Washington. Have a good day. This is Today in History. On December 24th, 563, the Eastern Orthodox Hagia Sophia Church in Constantinople was rededicated after being destroyed by earthquakes. In 1453, Constantinople was conquered by Muslims and the church was converted into a mosque. It became a museum in 1935. In 1524, Portuguese navigator and explorer Vasco da Gama died. Da Gama was the first European known to have successfully reached the western coast of India by sea. Two prominent Americans were born on this date. In 1745, American physician, educator, and co-signer of the Declaration of Independence, Benjamin Rush, was born. In 1809, it was American frontiersman Kit Carson, whose fame came from dime novels written about his exploits as an Indian fighter. In 1814, the Treaty of Ghent was signed, ending the War of 1812 between the United States and Britain. American scholar Clement Moore is believed to have written a poem he called A Visit from St. Nicholas on this date in 1822. It was eventually published and renamed 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, a beloved holiday classic. In 1851, the Library of Congress in Washington suffered a devastating fire that destroyed tens of thousands of books and irreplaceable paintings and statues. In 1826, a drunken Christmas party in a barracks at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point degenerated into what became known as the Eggnog Riot. 20 cadets and one enlisted soldier were court-martialed. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
In a popular American short story, a young couple, poor but very much in love, frets over what to give each other for Christmas. To buy her husband Jim a chain for his proudest possession, a gold pocket watch, Della sells her proudest possession, her long brown hair, to be made into a wig. Jim finds Della a fine pair of hair combs, but he can pay for them only by trading away his watch. When they exchange gifts and realize what they've done, their now useless presents are all the more precious because of the love and sacrifice they represent. The holiday of Christmas, which millions of Americans and others around the world celebrate today, has inspired many such tales. Some deal with the lessons of generosity and hope, others with the value of friendship, family, and faith. Oddly, one of the most famous, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, is essentially a ghost story. What they have in common is a spirit of redemption and rejoicing that has long touched the human heart. Tradition is as much a part of the holiday as is its spirit. As in much of the world, millions of Americans will exchange gifts, worship together in their various ways, then gather perhaps with family and friends to complete the celebration over dinner. Many will volunteer to help the homeless, hungry, and others in need. These sentiments transcend nationality, however, and even religion. As the world gets smaller, the Christmas spirit is seen in many places, from Europe to Africa and even Asia. In Japan, Christmas is known more as a time to spread happiness rather than as a religious celebration. Presents and cards are exchanged, and parties are often held for children, with games and dancing. In Madagascar, an island nation off the east coast of Africa, it's summer at Christmas time, but even though it's hot, many homes are decorated in the spirit of the season with holly and imitation snow, even though none of them exist there. The message of peace on earth and goodwill toward men is universal, and one that Americans wish to share at this time of year with all citizens of the world.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.